AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hey, just wanted to take a quick break from this episode so I could tell you guys about how I just launched my new Patreon page. If you don't know about Patreon, it's a great way for people to support creators with a monthly subscription. Becoming a Patreon supporter can even come with a few perks, like early access to new episodes and getting special shoutouts on the podcast. I've recently started working part-time at my job so I can focus more time and energy on the podcast and YouTube channel. So any support would be massively appreciated, and it helps me towards my hope of making this my full-time job someday. So if you want to help support me in that, please head over to patreon.com/hooptheory. That's Patreon, patreon.com/hooptheory. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the rest of the show. Hello, and welcome to the Mark Eaton episode of the Hoop Theory Podcast, aka episode 72, which is in honor of him being the best player ever to be selected with the 72nd pick in the NBA draft. My name is Logan Wortman, recording this one on the afternoon of Sunday, February 4th, and as usual, I'm joined by my proud co-host, Jacob Roth. Jacob, how does it feel to be on the Mark Eaton episode?
I'm doing pretty good. This is round two. We had a little bit of a recording snafu, so I did just learn today, my brain went like, Mark Eaton dropped 72. That's wild. And then my brain like thought about it. I'm like, wait. And then you informed me that it was the pick. Mm-hmm. It is not the number of points he had, because Mark Eaton, in one of the slowest eras of basketball in terms of number of possessions, wasn't necessarily known for being a straight
score.
Bucket.
Yeah. At all.
So that would be wild if he scored 73 as his career high, or 72, excuse me. 73 is a big important one. It's a big juicy one. So we'll talk about that next time, but I'm excited. We've got a lot of great things lined up, and we got the creative juices flowing. So let's get her done.
Yeah, we just did about 2 hours almost of a podcast episode that
we could have pretended that it was shorter, but it's cool.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
I realized all of a sudden, you know, I just wanted to go check to see how long we'd been recording, and I saw that there was no time going up. There was just zeros on the clock, so my recording had stopped at some point. So. Yeah, we're taking another go at it, but still should feel pretty fresh, maybe less rambly, more precise this time around.
Maybe this is what we should do every time.
Yeah, honestly, just record two episodes every single time as one's practice. but anyways, the last time we actually put out an episode was before the big thing happened where we, you know, it's a milestone moment. We were on another podcast. We got invited onto a different podcast, which is actually a really good podcast. That everybody should go listen to, the Hoop Journal podcast on Spotify and other places, I think. I know for sure it's on Spotify, though. Go follow them on Instagram, too. They have a lot of stuff there.
Hoop Journal _ is the tag to look at on Instagram. Mm-hmm. They are definitely a part of my regular listen. Mm-hmm. We'll have them over on this episode so you guys can get a little bit of a taste. We just got to figure out the scheduling times of that, because I just moved. And it's just a whole craziness. But Mitch and Dion know their stuff. I was definitely the dumbest person in the room when we did a all-star draft. It was a cool little thing. Telling everybody now, I did take at least one Celtic, because the world would be over, and you wouldn't be listening right now if I did not take a Celtic. Because that means Armageddon has happened. So anyway, it's really good. A lot of fun. Again, that's Hoop Journal. I know they're on Spotify. That's where I listen to them. Mm-hmm. And I know they're on Instagram because that is where I follow them. And they do a little bit different form of Instagram content than we do, but it's still good. Gets a lot of good news kind of flashes at you.
Yeah.
Which is honestly how you keep up to date on the wild world that is the 2023-24 NBA season.
Yeah, for sure. So that was a good time. Glad we have, you know, some peers in the basketball coverage industry now. That should be good for everybody to get more stuff from both of us in the future. But also something that I wanted to mention up top here was the TikTok following that we have there. That, you know, that's where our main audience is, obviously. We got 5K almost. We're coming up on 5K followers there. And the reason why we're addressing this is because we've announced for a while now, kind of just, lazily at the end of episodes, that we're going to give away a jersey, a free jersey to a follower once we reach 5K. We're at 46 something right now, I believe. So
46-14.
46-14, the exact number. And so once we reach 5K, we will be giving out a jersey of your choice to a follower. The way we're going to do the entry thing, you know, enter your name into this drawing, is to comment on this clip that you're watching right now on TikTok. It has to be on TikTok because that's where we're getting the followers. So on this TikTok clip right here, right now, got to comment what jersey you want. And we do have some restrictions on what you can get. So Jacob, yeah. What are those restrictions?
So can't get a Miles Bridges jersey because mm-hmm. I don't think that you should be able to get one in general, because the only one that should exist is like a orange jumpsuit.
Jumpsuit. Because Miles Bridges is a garbage person. He's made garbage decisions, at least.
Yes, he's done garbage at the minimum. Things. And then if you get a Draymond Green, we're going to assume that you were a baby, so you have to get a extra youth small.
Yep.
A youth extra small, or the smallest size that we can possibly get.
Man makes.
The smallest. You just get a Draymond Green Warriors onesie. Just kidding. It'll be a jersey. But those are the only two stipulations that we have. Uh-huh. Other than that, free game. City editions are good. Good for this year's city editions and jerseys. Anyway, we will reach out to you once we get to the 5,000. Look at this clip. And yeah. Those are the stipulations. I don't have anything else to add. You can cut.
But yeah, thanks everybody for following us over these past several months. It's
mind-boggling.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
4,600, almost 5,000 people that ever, you know, like, we're all people that have been on the internet, and you always see the people, oh, I'm so thankful for, I didn't get it. I was like, whatever. I get it now. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's crazy that I'm not just talking to the nothingness.
Yeah.
There's people that think I have Down syndrome in the nothingness. I don't, and I'm thankful for all of you, even if you think my takes are whack. It's fine, because I'm a football guy mostly. So, anyway, mm-hmm. That's all. Thank you. Comment in this video or clip, whatever. And if you're listening to the full podcast, get ready for some high-quality entertainment.
Yeah. So, moving on from that, the thing that I feel like is at the top of the list of news is the Embiid situation.
Yeah.
How, you know, he's having one of the best seasons of all time. We, you know, we had a whole episode about that, about you posing the question of, you know, whether it's okay.
Is Patrick Beverly crazy to call it one of the best seasons of all time?
Uh-huh. So, yeah, it's definitely in that area. If he were to play, like, if you take games played out as a variable, like, don't even factor that in, definitely a case for the best season ever. But he's going to be definitely struggling in the games played department. He's played 34 of the 48 so far, and he just tore his meniscus, his left lateral meniscus.
So we looked at this earlier. It's the left lateral meniscus. He has a displaced flap. One of the big options is surgery, and that would probably put him out for the rest of the season. And this is, it was kind of a weird timeline thing. So we're recording this, as Logan said, to open things up on the 4th of February, which is a Sunday. This past Tuesday is when the injury happened. Kuminga, right?
Yep, Jonathan Kuminga.
Yep, Jonathan Kuminga kind of dove for the ball, and it didn't really look like he super hit Embiid's knee. It looked like he kind of just like grazed
past
it. He
like hit lower on his leg, I think. And
he made contact, like, but it wasn't like a malicious dive. He was diving for the ball,
yeah.
And then Embiid went down and was out for the rest of the game. Something was very clearly wrong with that left knee.
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward, then like the speculation was out because it was reported by a couple people. I think Woj was one of them, and then the like a Philly beat reporter both said a meniscus injury. They did not say a tear because that was not kind of public info really at all. Mm-hmm. It just said there was a meniscus injury, and then people were saying, oh, it's a tear, it's a tear. Then they came out yesterday, I believe, and it was said what it was, which is a displaced flap, which is a type of meniscus tear. So there's all the doctor talk out of the way, kind of what happened. Mm-hmm. Most likely is done for the majority of the rest of the regular season, if not just the entirety of the 23-24 season. And we might not see him again until we roll all the way around and tip things off again. Kind of meniscus is a weird part of the knee because, I mean, there's all sorts of stories. Robert Williams III is one of them where, like, in the Celtics run where they ended up losing to the Warriors in the finals, he just got his meniscus taken out and was back in, I think he was back in 4 weeks, but it was supposed to be closer to 6 to 8.
Yeah.
But it like, it has lasting effects if you get rid of your meniscus. It does a lot for the stabilization of your knee. Mm-hmm. Again, take this all with a grain of salt. I am not an orthopedic person.
Yeah.
I'm just a guy that's read stuff online. So
yeah.
Grain of salt.
Another great example or notable example of that is Dwayne Wade back in like the 2014 range with the Heat to make one last run with them. Yeah, he was closer to the end of his career probably because he had been struggling with a lot of injuries at that point, but he just got it taken out so he could play in the playoffs that year. And then he ended up retiring 5 seasons later. Really, he made it 5 more years, but he was not the same Dwayne Wade after that for sure.
It's definitely like you're sacrificing like longevity and explosiveness. And it's just because it
with a guy whose nickname is literally the Flash, you know, it's probably not going to do super great things for the rest of his career, but yeah,
with knees. Yeah. And Embiid's already had a lot of knee issues. That's been, cause he already has one of his meniscus gone. I don't know if it's I think you have 2 meniscus per knee.
Per knee. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have like a lateral and then a whatever the opposite of lateral is.
Vertical?
It's not internal.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
One of them is already gone. He already had one of them removed in a previous time. I don't know which one it was. But he's probably going to be out for the season. And this has sent a bunch of things spiraling in terms of the Sixers having this level of season. He was the clear front runner for MVP, maybe the most clear front runner of MVP we've seen in a while, at least at this point in the season. Obviously, there was a lot of it left, under half of it left. But he was definitely the in control front runner, and now he's very clearly not because he's probably not even going to hit the 65 game mark, which makes him eligible for the post regular season awards. Mm-hmm. So I just think that as Logan said, it's kind of snowballed to a bunch of topics, and it's worth bringing up. Because I was looking at the current standings and what teams are hot and what teams are not. The Sixers might find themselves, despite being where they were when Embiid was playing, they might end up a play-in team, which is crazy to think.
Yeah. Yeah, if they spiral after this, that would be big and could definitely send them down there with the East not being like the most competitive. Obviously not. The West is like where all the competition is for the most part. But East isn't, you know, the league is very talent rich right now. So,
but Cleveland and New York have already passed them. So Philly's currently 5th in the standings.
Indiana's
right below them. Miami is on a downhill, but I wouldn't be shocked if Miami gets some things figured out. And then that already puts the Sixers Orlando. In the play-in. Yeah. Orlando. And then you've got the Bulls and the Hawks. So that's
probably
a little
not.
Different.
Yeah, probably. Not.
Probably. But that's like, but there's a very real world where without Embiid, I would take the Magic, the Heat, and the Pacers in like a series. Like, I think they're a better team than the Joel Embiid-less Sixers. Emphasis on the Joel Embiid-less, yeah. Not there. Because uh-huh. If he is there, they're like the second scariest team in the East.
Yeah,
and he's healthy. Mm-hmm.
I'd agree.
So,
I guess if he gets his recovery expedited by doing the route of getting his meniscus removed, I think even then, though, he's still going to be out 4 to 6 weeks at the minimum, you would think?
I'd probably go 6 to 8. I think is what the technical
that's like the actual range that I think people give, but we've seen people come back from a meniscus in like 3 to 4 weeks before. In the most extreme cases,
he would still be ineligible because he only has 4 games left.
Yeah, exactly.
For the 65. So that's out the window. Not really a question anymore. It's more just how does this snowball and impact the rest of the NBA? Sucks for Embiid because of you can't emphasize it enough. Like, especially even I feel like after we had that conversation, he like tuned it up. Like he had a couple huge games.
Oh yeah.
After we had that conversation. Game, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he really was looking like having one of those seasons. But I did notice one of his absences happened to be in a certain arena that we've been to a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I'll let you run away with this one because it's Nuggets land. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, the whole Embiid ducking Jokic narrative that I feel like it definitely made like national media circles this year more so than it did even last year, which I feel like it is when it really became
any of the past
thing.
5 years. Yeah. Any of the past 5 years, it never came up until this one.
Yeah. Last year, our podcast covered it. And it was a big thing in the Denver media world because it was like, it's literally the fourth season in a row that he's not playing here. And he just went off against, you know, Jokic in Philly recently. And so it became clear that it's like obviously part of his campaigning for the MVP award, trying to prove in that specific matchup who's the more dominant player, which I don't think should be a knock on Embiid at all that he cares about that, because that's just natural for a competitor to, you know, it's the weirder person in this scenario is Jokic, who doesn't care at all. Like that's the weirder guy in this scenario. Neither one is necessarily bad, but they're just different. And Jokic plays those games like they're just any other, you know, regular season game and puts up his required normal numbers, you know, like a 25, 10, 7 at least, 50. You know.
It's something a 25-10-9-10. Like I'm going to call it 10. It's pretty much a triple-double just regularly. Sometimes he'll get 15 boards and only 7 assists.
Yeah.
Sometimes he gets 15 assists and only 7 boards.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Exactly. So he does those normal numbers, and Embiid, you know, just takes a lot of shots. He was really efficient, to be fair. It helped that, like, from the mid-range, he was just, like, on the whole game. Like, he was not missing, so he...
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Just was going to work in the mid-range all game long, and it definitely won his team the game. Like, it wasn't like he was just points hunting and stat chasing like to the detriment of his team. Like, it was definitely helping his team win.
He
for sure.
He put his team in the backpack and just did it.
Yeah.
He just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it definitely was a lot of like getting his own shot and stuff like that. So, like, just the idea of him doing that and then not allowing every single year in a row to have Jokic have the home court advantage, which this never gets brought up enough in this conversation. It gets brought up all the time when, like, games are actually being played in Denver. But, you know, the Denver Nuggets franchise, historically, out of any franchise in the NBA, has the most significant home court advantage win-loss record-wise than any other team.
That's almost every sport.
Probably,
Denver teams
yeah.
always do.
Yeah.
No, it's like this, as a factual piece of info, maybe not baseball, but I'm almost positive football is a similar story where the home field advantage of
the mile
being
high.
The altitude, the mile high, mm-hmm. Just gives them an inherent, even when they're bad teams, they just sneak out some wins and have... Every franchise just has bad teams. So,
because I guess Salt Lake is the only thing they're in is the NBA. So that's the only thing you can go based off of. And they're the second best home court advantage. It's a very similar reason. Denver's significantly higher, though, in altitude than Salt Lake. So, the altitude there, just getting like players getting acclimated to the difference in altitude is something that it's hard on, you know, the respiratory system. They get winded a lot more easily, essentially, is what it boils down to. Where it's the most noticeable is like earlier on in the game. That's why Denver at home is like the best first quarter team in the league, because where you're feeling it the most is in the first quarter while you're getting acclimated to the altitude. And then also it hurts Denver on the road because it goes the opposite way as well. It's not as significant as when you're going up in altitude where you have to get reacclimated, but there is a reacclimation process that you have to undergo when you decline in elevation as well.
It's just a difference in the oxygen intake levels and, you know, stuff like that. So it just makes the Nuggets a just scientifically, you know, more advantageous for them to be at home and less advantageous for them to be on the road. And so that little factor is just another wrinkle in this on top of the other things we've already talked about. But that's basically the story of why Embiid sits out those games in Denver. And the last time he has played in a game in Denver, we were both there in 2019, and Jokic hit a game winner in that game. And that is also one of the only two times Embiid has ever played in Denver. The other one was in his rookie year where neither of them had even made an all-star team yet. So not really even part of this era. But this year, it definitely got the most reaction, biggest reaction for sure. Number one, because of how long it's been, like how the pattern has continued. But also the fact that he was a late game scratch was a big talking point for head coach Michael Malone and others. Because, you know, for those who don't know, it was 15 minutes before the game. I don't know when exactly he did get put on there, but I know for a fact that what has been reported is 15 minutes before tip off, he was still not on the injury report, which is just, that's insane. To go, I don't know if that's ever happened. Michael Malone has said that he's never seen that happen, where a player 15 minutes before the game is not even on the injury report. He's listed as active. There's no sort of question mark on him at all. And then all of a sudden he's out.
They got fined for it.
Yeah, that's how, a serious or like uncharacteristic or unlike, you know, common of a thing that is. But so the story I've heard, because I think that there's definitely a lot of people, the main reaction from people was that he was ducking Jokic and that's what he was planning on doing the whole time. But me personally, I kind of feel like there might be some validity to the theory, at least, that he actually was planning on playing. And it's just like a very unfortunate circumstance or coincidence that he also just so happened to start going through this knee injury at the same time. And it overlapped with this game that he had circled on his calendar of like, I got to play. I got to be available for this game. And the reason why, you know, people are saying that is because I think it was the game of right before. I'm not completely sure on that, but it was shortly before the at Denver game. The Sixers played Indiana. And in that game, Embiid had a tweak to his knee. So he had, you know, it was a little bit of a injury that he developed there. And then after that, he apparently told this. This is not confirmed, I don't think, it might be confirmed somewhere. I haven't seen it, but I've just heard people say it, that apparently Embiid told the Sixers medical staff that he didn't even want them to put him on the injury list at all. Like he wanted them to keep him off the injury report because he was like, there's no doubt. I'm promising, you know, myself and everybody that I'm going to play. I'm going to be available for the Denver game. You know, he was just making a point that he wanted to play in that game no matter what. And then,
man, when as like my delusional self has like gotten past the Sixers, like I have no fear of them at all. If that's true, he is up there as one of my like, I just like this guy, guys. Because like his trolling is funny, but like just like Trae Young. Like, a Knicks fan will never be like, Trae Young's pretty okay at basketball. He, like, will just hate him inherently.
Yeah.
And, like, because I think Trae Young is hilarious, but then when he did it to the Celtics last year in the first round, I'm like, I get why it's annoying. Mm-hmm. I get it. I get why it makes you mad. I feel like Joel Embiid, like, I've gotten past the, like, amount of hate I should have in, like, the Sixers-Celtics thing.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, honestly, he's really good at basketball. But then, like, if that's true where he's like, I'm sick, because he does care what people think, like kind of a lot.
Uh-huh.
So if he's like, I'm playing, I don't care, keep me off your list, I'm doing this.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty, if he would have followed through, it would have been way harder.
Yeah.
He didn't, so it's a little bit less like, okay, big dog in the house. Uh-huh. I just think that, I mean, that's pretty ballsy to be like, okay, I'm doing this. I mean, playing a game, and I don't know how you feel, I guess. I feel like past years, dodging definitely happened.
Yeah, I do think so, for sure. Last year, I think he won, because he had zero injury. There was no injury that he came right back the next game. He was hiding in the locker room, which people on TikTok, by the way, commented when we talked about that back when we first started posting TikToks. It's called me a liar, said that I was capping by saying that he was hiding in the locker room. But if you guys didn't believe me then, didn't you should believe me in this year, this game, he was doing that all first half. He didn't come out to the bench until in the second half. So he was doing it again, you know, this year, but he didn't fully do it all the way. But yeah, last year though, from people in Denver all said that he was spotted back in the tunnels and hallways near the locker room, but he was never out on the court at all. And yeah, so
this
I think
year feels different. Was no, this year feels different was my biggest like kind of like yeah. point is yeah. And then he ended up getting hurt. So obviously there was something with his knee. It was mm-hmm. the knee that got tweaked, if we want to call it that, against the Pacers. Mm-hmm. It was the same knee. Like there was very clearly something wrong.
Yeah,
he was hobbled. Just this very unfortunate timing that he was able to go like so banana crazy in Philly. Jokic also had a fine game, but in Philly he had such a kind of dominant performance like you talked about. Mm-hmm. And then to like coincidentally for the fifth time in a row not play in Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just looks a little like, yeah, it probably. But the thing is, suspicious. For me, it feels like if he was planning on ducking the whole time, mm-hmm. it would just make sense for him. It doesn't make much sense for him not to be on the injury report at all heading into the night if he was planning on ducking, because that obviously just looks way worse for him, like optically, if he wasn't on the injury report and then just is a late game or a late last minute scratch, you know?
And then it costs his team a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I don't know what they got, but I think it was like a sizable amount.
70,000, I think. I'm pretty sure. So, which it's fun if the story that we're telling
$75,000.
75. Yeah. So, if the story we're telling is true, then he told the Sixers medical staff not to put him on the injury report,
and then
that, yeah, and told them that he was playing, and then he ended up not being able to play, and they got the team, not him, got fined $75,000, which is just kind of it's just a funny thing, but. I understand, though, the reason why, like, it's definitely possible that he was wanting to play that whole time, and then just 15 minutes before the game, it was like, probably can't do this, because, you know, he's gone through warm-ups, and he's still feeling, you know, the soreness or the tightness or whatever he had going on in his knee. And then, on top of that, other situation on top of this is, like, all the players on his team that were out, a lot of them were late-game scratches as well, or late, last minute. I keep saying late game. It's before the game, but...
Yeah, it was like right before last minute. Yeah.
And so those guys were Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris. So number two and number three of the best players on the Sixers. And then De'Anthony Melton, who I think is one of their top five guys, honestly. And then Robert Covington, who's, you know, in their top eight guys rotation. So
they were playing without half of their rotation.
Yeah.
Over half of their playoff rotation did not play.
And so Embiid would be playing with a hobbled knee, without all of his best player, like all of his starters, you know, on his team. And then also on top of that, he's going against who he just a couple weeks ago called the best player on planet Earth, as his matchup for the day. So it sounds like probably not a wise thing to do, to just try to go out there and soldier through it. So I think the right decision was made at the end of the day, although it optically looked pretty rough for him.
Well, no, and then I think I don't remember where this came up, but you know, it was totally you that said it, like probably pushed him to come back. Yeah. Was the giant
reaction
uproar of why didn't you play? So then he does come back probably earlier than he should have.
Yep.
And now we just don't get to have Embiid for the rest of the season after he's having like a new, this is like Embiid 2 almost, because of his like new getting his teammates involved element.
Oh
like,
yeah, that is a bit, that's a huge part of not that, just their team success, but like him as a player. His
why this is one of the best seasons ever is because of that.
Like he's doing all the stuff he did last year that made him MVP. He's doing all of that stuff even better this year. And then add in that he's added this whole new element of, like, which I shouldn't say whole new element, because people underrate that Embiid this.
How good he was before.
Yeah, he's always been a pretty decent, like whenever there's a double team, like he's a pretty decent decision maker. He's a capable passer. But now the way they're running their offense is like solely based around the handoff game between Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, which last year it was all the spread pick and roll game of James Harden and Joel Embiid, which for those who don't know, a handoff action, like dribble handoffs, DHOs, and spread pick and roll, are they at the end of the day, they are the same type of action. They get the same sort of advantage on the court, but the stats you're going to produce from them are different, because in the handoff action, the big is going to come away with a lot more assists when you're running a handoff action, because yeah. It's a pick and roll, but the ball starts in the big man's hand.
Big's hands.
And the screen is the handoff, you know? And so that's how the way they get into it is different. But so that's the main reason why I'd say Embiid's assist numbers are going up, because he's handing it off to Tyrese Maxey just about every play down the court. And then last year, he was more just like the roller and the finisher in the two-man game of Harden and Embiid, where Harden starts off with the ball up at half court. And it's just a pick and roll game where James Harden has the ball the entire set and then dishes it off to Embiid on the roll or a shooter. You know, if they overplay the pick and roll action, then there's
Rocco in the corner. Yeah.
Something like that. So yeah, that's why I'd say he's gone up in that department for the most part. But on top of that, they also are using him more as a hub. Which a lot of teams have copied, obviously, with the Nuggets winning the championship. Weird how that happens when a team wins the championship. Usually you see a lot more teams replicating that team.
Yep.
And
I was also shocked to see how many NBA teams were already kind of ready, already had their Jokic clones in place. Yeah. And they just had to, like, flip the switch. Mm-hmm. Like, the Rockets just had to be like, we're running it through Şengün now. And, I mean, the Kings did it last year. They were ahead of the copycat, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Sabonis had already kind of done that for him. But it's definitely, like, elevated where everyone, even we were like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that that's how this team ran their offense.
Yeah.
And everyone has, like, a pseudo-clone, yeah.
It's funny when you think about how the Kings, like, what all, like, the basketball analysts would describe them as offensively were, like, a cross between the Warriors and the Nuggets offenses, which were two of like the most unique and I guess like effective offenses that we've seen in the past decade. And so they were like a cross between those two stylistically. And it's like no wonder why, when you look at the head coach of the team is Mike Brown, who had been the assistant in Golden State the past 6 years. And the head assistant in Sacramento is the former assistant in Denver, Jordy Fernandez. So like makes sense. And then Chris Finch also is often credited as the guy who invented that offense in what Denver runs, like around Jokic, because he was the offensive coordinator in Denver back when Jokic first, you know, the first Jokic ever in 2016, when he became a full-time starter and we started building around him. He's the one who implemented that offense, and he's the head coach in Minneapolis now and uses Cat as that playmaking hub a lot. So it's
I like Chris Finch a lot. I mean, he's coached the Wolves to be they were the one seed for a long time.
Yeah.
Now the West, the one seed is pretty much a just slap fight. Who played a game last night is the one seed between the Clippers, Wolves, Thunder, and Nuggets.
Yeah.
It's a crazy deal.
Which looking at this right now on NBA standings on Google, it's kind of funny. It says the Clippers are in third. Because they have a slightly higher win percentage than the Nuggets, but
they've played three less games.
Yeah, and they're 1.0 games back of the first spot, it says. But the Nuggets, it says they're a half game back from the first spot. But they're the fourth.
Maybe it's head to head. And if you've played less games, the games back mechanic is based on number of games played.
Yeah, it wouldn't line up with percentage exactly, especially when the percentage is as close as 0.681 versus 0.680. So.
Jeez, yeah, it's a wild deal.
Yeah, the Nuggets are 34-16 and the Clippers are 32-15.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Also, something to make your heart happy. Brad Beal, we're currently recording on the 4th, in his return to Washington, has 33 points with 10 minutes left in the third.
Oh, wow. Good Brad for Beal him, too. He's not had a great season so far.
No, he's been battling some sort of something, but He's came back and he's in DC and he's cooking. So there's an easy to feel good for type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Brad Beal.
Shout out. Yeah, the only guy in the NBA that has a no trade clause in his contract, which is just still really? Wild. Yeah. He's the only one. Only current one right now. Which is just nuts. Which is kind of goes into the thing we were talking about earlier, which I can't remember now if that was this episode or the one that got scrapped.
It was our scrapped recording, but feel like it's kind of...
Yeah, the teams that get they get their hands tied by players because of their small market stature.
I feel like we could kind of dive into that side. I feel like we've kind of touched on Embiid quite a bit already. I feel like we're good there.
Yeah, I think so.
So the other half... the other half of the Embiid thing is he's not going to get MVP or all NBA because he's not going to make it to even close to 65 games.
Mm-hmm.
And the 65 game thing is going to be it's going to stay. This is going to exist.
Yeah, it's in the first year of it.
Mm-hmm. It's the first year of it, and it's impacting like a lot of guys. Embiid was one of them. Another one that I think is going to be a lot more like, oh, this kind of hurts, because Embiid might only end up playing 34 games, but Tyrese Halliburton, who is probably the best, just if you're going pure point guard, what a quote-unquote point guard is, Halliburton is probably the best in the NBA at that.
Yeah.
He might not be able to be an all-NBA player, because he's had a couple five-game stretches that he's taken off thus far, and only has like three more games of wiggle room to work with to be able to play in 65 games.
He was just out for like a month for the hamstring injury that he had, which that was where that's what tanked him down the games played thing a lot for sure.
And so it's just gonna be, it'll just be a problem that like people will have to look at, I guess. And it's hard because this type of a rule needs to exist. Like, you can't, for lack of a better, like Kawhi it and only play in 40 games and still get all of these accolades and things like that. Granted, guys that played in only 40 or only 41, because it's a nice even round and middle of the season type of number, those guys weren't getting those type of accolades anyway.
Yeah.
But
there were a few like that were like 54 games would get it. Like LeBron. Like
last year.
LeBron, who played, I think this was 2 years ago, LeBron, who played 54 games, made a third team. A few years ago now. It would have been 2 years ago. It was a few years ago now. The only third team LeBron's ever made. Because he's every other year he's been either outside of his rookie year where he didn't make any, but every other year has been either first team or second team, and then he has one third team. And that season he only played like 54, something really short.
Yeah, and there's just like a lot of guys that this year, moving past Embiid, moving past Halliburton, Devin Booker is a big one that he might not be eligible for awards. Kyrie's already not eligible, not that he would be in that same conversation, but like Donovan Mitchell. There's just a lot of guys that are already getting close to that mark. Kevin Durant can only miss 10 more games, which is not near as close as some of the other guys, but there's 34 games left, and if he sits a couple, he could sneak up and be really close to that 65.
Yeah.
There's just some guys that definitely would be all NBA that are just going to miss out, and it just kind of brings up the further point of there's just going to be guys that miss out that shouldn't. And it's just a hard rule.
And the case where it really matters a lot is the Tyrese Halliburton case specifically, because he has yet to, you know, get paid his big contract yet, because he's still pretty early in his career. And he is has not made an All-NBA team yet in his career.
You know, he has next year too for the extension. Well, no, because the extension talks would be next year. So it'd have to be this year, right?
I think he might already have his first extension, I want to say, because he was in the Ant draft class, right? That's so they're in their fourth year now. So yeah, they've been done with that for a while, because that's usually heading into the third season where a lot of guys are getting their extensions.
Has he been in the league for 4 years?
Yeah.
For some reason, I felt like it was less. My brain is broken.
He was in the Ant, the Ant and LaMelo and.
No, I'm sure you're Wiseman. Right. My brain is just 2020. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, the year that there's a lot of people who said he should go fourth. I was on the Halliburton train of thinking, like, I wasn't thinking he was going to be a star. I thought he would be a really good piece, and the draft kind of fell off after the top three, and I thought fourth would have been a decent spot for him. He slid all the way to 12th somehow, which a lot of GMs around the league are definitely kicking themselves now for that. But yeah, so if he were to make All-NBA this year, it would be a difference of like $40 to $50 million worth of money that he would be able to get on his next contract. And so that's like a pretty big difference, obviously.
And not saying that he can't replicate it moving forward, but like,
yeah,
he is having a season that deserves it, not a question.
Mm-hmm.
And if he ends up playing in 64 games, if he ends up really close, stays healthy, if he ends up only playing in 50, that's different. But
yeah,
if he gets and he's in 60 games or whatever, and he's just close and doesn't quite get there. And the other thing that's hard is he's on minutes restrictions. And for games to count for this, you have to play in 20 minutes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think his minutes restriction is less than 20. But
yeah, it's the low 20s, though. I think the first game back, he played 21.
And I'm sure that was a very intentional get him to at least 20-something and then get him out. But like,
yeah,
just things like that are – it just – the rule I don't feel like should make things feel wrong. You know what I mean? Like,
because yeah, I think 65 is too high.
It would feel wrong if Tyrese Haliburton is not an all NBA first, second, or third team.
If he plays, let's say, 60 to 64 games and he's not, yeah, I'd say that's wrong. I think 60 should be the line, or even low. I'd be open to it being lower because, like, I think it's important. You're just setting a baseline of it, you know, like the very minimum. Because outside of that, I think voters will take into account games played, you know? Like,
naturally, they just will.
Like, there's a guy who if he plays like 56 games, has a really good season. But this other guy who didn't have quite as good of a season, but played like, you know, 25 more games than him, you know, that guy's probably going to get the spot based off of the voting history of the awards, you know? So
Jokic is Jokic is a walking example of that.
The reason he didn't win it last year was because he only played 3 more games than Embiid. Which is very weird.
As opposed to the regular, because Embiid or Jokic has played, he didn't have any 82s. He had a couple 82s.
Yeah. He's had 4 seasons, I believe, where he played every single game. Last year was his least healthy season, and it was Embiid's most healthy season of his career. And he still played more than him. Jokic played 69 games last season, and Embiid played 66.
And it's just, like, there's just things like that where it just is a weird. And the other part of this whole thing that this brings up is now the fact that this impacts money, it just makes it so much more of this weird rules, a system that's already messed up and broken. Like Haliburton, Brown having the ability to get that type of a contract and Haliburton not. Granted, Brown's been doing it longer and Halliburton's kind of exploded and only has maybe combining the two seasons together has 1 year's worth of, he's kind of sort of that guy. But it's still like, that's just bad. It just is fundamentally flawed system in the media, which we could go, that could be a whole episode of how the media just messes things up. It's just difficult and it's hard to really quantify on what, this is just bad. It's just bad.
Mm-hmm.
Please fix it, Adam.
Yeah. But it's hard to think about what other method you would use to get somebody to that mark, because I think we talked about it last time, but to explain why this exists in the first place, why it's not just like let the market decide whether or not you're worth a supermax.
Oh, yeah, because that was a point that I brought up, was like, why does it have to be, oh, you have to have these accolades to get this extra money? Just make like the value of
what teams are willing
to
pay,
what you're worth.
Yeah.
What the teams across the NBA, everybody will take the highest deal. That's just almost always what will happen. So if no one is willing to pay you more than X number of dollars, you're just worth X number of dollars. But then you pointed out the why that would be a problem.
Yeah. And I guess to explain it even in better detail this time around, it really starts back with the bird rights becoming a thing. Because, you know, that was put into place to protect smaller market teams and try to keep, you know, the same people staying in the same market for longer. You know, keep stars in the market that drafted them. And so the bird rights, for those who don't know, is that the team that has your bird rights, the team that you signed your last deal with, they are capable of paying you like 5% more, I believe is the number, than any other team is able to pay you for your next contract. So you can, and also they're able to sign you to an additional year. So a max contract with bird rights is 5 years, while if you signed with any other team, it'd be 4 years, which is pretty major. So you get more money and more years if you were to sign with the team that has your bird rights. I think it's 25 versus 30%, I believe is the numbers, of the salary cap. of the team's
salary. And so for full bird rights, the only limit in place is the max salary a player can receive. It is 25% of the cap, 30% of the cap, or 35% of the cap. I'm trying to figure out what the different, like, what makes it 35 as opposed to 25.
What? So you said that that's what?
So, okay, this is, there's.
Well, bird rights, so it gets more extreme the longer you've been with the franchise, if that's.
So I'm assuming that that's, it starts at 25% of the cap is your bird rights deal, and then 30% of the cap is the middle ground.
Once you've been, I think it's like, goes by like five, I think it's, the first milestone is like 4 or 5 years, and then it's like 7 or 8, and then, you know, 11 or 12, something like that.
A team gets a player's non-bird rights if he spends a single year with the team. A team gets a player's early bird rights if he spends 2 years with a team without leaving in free agency. And a team gets a player's full bird rights if they spend 3 years with their team without leaving in free agency. It doesn't have to be on a three-year deal. It applies to players on it can apply any way that you've been with the same team for 3 years.
Okay. So it's not even – all right. Well, so it turns out the same way usually. But it's not the rule that I thought dictated it, which was who you signed your last deal with, is how I thought it worked. But it's wherever you've been actually playing, actually like existing, you know, on the roster for the last several years.
But it's if you leave in free agency, because I've learned this via you that if
you're traded, you get the bird rights traded.
The bird rights, it's like
it's on your contract.
Yes,
they're trading your bird rights along with your contract to the team that they're trading you to.
Yes,
is how that works. Yeah, so that's what bird rights are, and that was, you know, put in place to protect smaller market teams who aren't as big of free agent destinations as like an LA or a Miami or a New York, obviously.
Yep.
And so then another thing that was put in place to, you know, go even further in that direction, because still, even with all of these rules, we still see a significant advantage with those bigger market teams like the Lakers, you know, year after year are getting the star players to come and flock to their markets. This other thing that they added was the All-NBA thing. So like if you make All-NBA, then you are able to sign for more money. You're eligible for a supermax deal. So that combined with the bird can make you have the highest amount possible with the team that drafted you. And so the reason why they have that is because if you, with the bird rights thing, the team that owns you, or not owns you, wow, that was the team that owns your rights, that owns your bird rights, they are able to sign you to, you know, a significantly bigger contract. If it's a smaller market team with a star player that maybe isn't worth that to every team in the NBA, like the Lakers, but are worth that to, say, like the Memphis Grizzlies, then that puts Memphis Grizzlies in a scenario where they are signing a lower commodity, you know, a lower value player for more money because...
A Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, because of the lack of free agency attraction destination, you know, factor that they have. So then if it were to be just a outside of NBA, like there were no requirements for what makes you eligible for a Supermax, and like a team can just pay you that if they think you're worth that.
You would have people way worse than Jaylen Brown getting
money. Yeah, it puts way more power to the player in that situation who plays for a very small market team to put the smaller market team's hands are basically cuffed. You know, it's like either we go back into mediocrity or even worse for a long, like the foreseeable future.
We lose the asset completely, or we just tie a third of our salary cap to this guy because we have to.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. So, but yeah, honestly, we didn't get into this last episode yet, or I shouldn't say last episode, but the pre-existing.
Missed recording. The lost recording.
The lost tape. Yeah. Of this one. Was honestly, I wouldn't be opposed. I know this it would never in a million years happen because of I can already imagine the amount of people who would push back against it. Just me personally, I look at every year I keep an eye on the MVP tracker from Basketball Reference. I think they have a really good MVP tracker. It does all the calculating of like a player's statistical case for the MVP award, and that's all it's taking into effect is like the number of games they played, how efficient they have been, like how much they help their team win, their
win
on and
shares,
off metrics,
yep, all these,
all things. That kind of stuff, and compares that to the historical winners of the award and sees who this year is having the most MVP-esque season, and then it gives each of those players a probability of how likely they are to win the award, which is what the percentage is how closely their stats or their numbers resemble the average MVP winner. And year after year, it has chosen the correct player for MVP all the way up until last season because it had Nikola Jokic instead of Joel Embiid.
Embiid is off that list now.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. Just today was the first day that I've checked this and seen Joel Embiid completely drop out. The other day I saw that he had dropped to second or third, something like that.
Assuming he'd missed some games, yeah.
But yeah, I'm wondering if that was manually done because he hasn't missed the market because Tyrese Haliburton is still on here, you know? And I don't know.
I just think but Tyrese Haliburton.
He's played three more games though.
If I was a gambler, Tyrese Haliburton is almost hundreds of times more likely to make that mark, even if it's not 100%. But then Joel Embiid, with the information we know now, he is just infinitely more likely to be able to play enough games than Embiid is, I think. Yeah. But maybe this is just, I don't want to say justice because it involves somebody getting injured, but it'll just, in our brains, all of us will collectively be, last year's was Jokic's award, and this year was Embiid's award, and it's fine, and everyone has the right number of MVPs. It just sucks that Jokic doesn't get his three-peat in terms of the historical significance of winning MVP three times in a row. Because yeah. I think that it's like a cliff. It's like, now that Embiid's, we're going to call him out of the race, it's Jokic on a plane, and then there's like this drop.
Oh, yeah.
And my brain goes like, Shea? I guess it's exactly the three people. Well, they have a bigger drop for Luka than my brain does, but it's Shea and Giannis is the next two in terms of highest probability, which I totally agree with. I have Luka up there also.
Luka's
just
because
my brain. Luka's four, but percentage wise, they have him a pretty big drop after Giannis.
Oh yeah, I think that's just because the team record is the major thing there. Because historically, teams that have what the Mavs have right now they've never had an MVP. Other than Russell Westbrook might have been close to that.
The triple double, Russell.
Yeah. So, but that's definitely an outlier. That would be an outlier in this. I'm not sure if they would have had Russell. I would doubt that they would have Russell Westbrook on here. I don't know if this existed in 2017 or not, but I doubt he would have been on here as number one. I think he would probably have been Harden or Kawhi that year, to be honest. But anyways, I think that I'm sure that you'll probably push back on this, knowing you, but I feel like I would honestly be happy if we just use that. It was just like, whoever is number one on there is just MVP. Because I feel like it more often be correct than if we let voters, because last year is a perfect example of not statistical case or basketball case, or it was a narrative thing.
Driven, yeah.
That just all, like the momentum of this big narrative that happened after Jokic started going through a slump at the end of the season because he was like stopped caring about the end of the season. Also, I think still that he wanted Embiid to win the MVP because he was tired of being asked about it. He was tired of all the drama around it and it started becoming a race thing. And
like, he wanted to be done. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because was it Kendrick Perkins?
Yep.
Made it a race thing.
And us living in Nebraska, we all, I'm sure both of us had people in of our family become more and more aware of that now because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I thought was wild.
Yeah.
And it's fine because it's ESPN's job to find talking points, but I just was
that one was
shocked.
A little, yeah.
I was like, what? What?
And then what made it even more of a viral clip too was the fact that the person who pushed back on it and was arguing with it was JJ Redick.
JJ Redick.
He's a white person.
And then I think my favorite part was that the mediator of the conversation,
Stephen A.
was Stephen A. just in the middle.
He was agreeing with JJ, but
more than Perkins.
Yeah.
But I feel like he was also just like, it was just weird to have like the guy that you think is like confrontation incarnate be the one to be like, let's take a chill pill, guys.
Yeah. But yeah, so
anyway,
it was just getting ugly. I feel like Jokic was like, honestly, I don't even want the award. Just give it to
you. You could take my other two that I have. I don't just stop.
Yeah, I mean, literally, the his last MVP that he got, he left it in the arena after they gave it to him. Like, he just left it. Like, somebody, a staffer of the arena had.
Got to see or not?
Say that again. Sorry.
Is that the one we saw when we went to the playoff game? Or
his first one. I think it was the second.
Because that was the Suns in four game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which we've told that before.
Though. Was in the Warriors series, I want to say, in the playoffs. He left the award at the arena, and arena staffer had to like chase him out to his car and be like, no, take this home. Like, that's how little he cares about the MVP award. So he took the rest of the season off, which this was just a factor that ended up in the narrative thing, and then also like the race thing, as we brought up. And on top of that, Embiid was, that was late in the season when Embiid had that great game in their one head-to-head matchup that they played.
For those keeping track at home, NBA teams are supposed to have two every year.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be a home and away, if you haven't picked up on that.
If you're in opposite conferences, yeah. And then the other thing was people saying that Jokic should not get a third straight, because historically he would be an outlier, which is not even true, which that's the thing that makes me even more mad about it, is that it's not breaking the precedent. Because literally there's only three people ever who have won three MVP straight. That's Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and Larry Bird. And the thing that people always brought up was all three of those guys have won championships. But it's like, you're not taking into account how he probably should have been on a championship caliber team, at least the 2 years prior to this, if his team was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking away that from him. And then also you're discounting the fact that literally Wilt Chamberlain, the season that he won his third MVP, when the MVP was awarded to him, he did not have a ring yet. He won the championship
after
that season in the playoffs.
The same thing that would have happened to Jokic.
To Jokic, exactly. So it wouldn't have been like that wild. Also, like, there's so many crazier things like that happen for the first time every single year than that. You know what I mean? Like, why are we gateway? Like, I don't even know the word I'm looking for.
Gatekeeping.
Gatekeeping. Why are we gatekeeping that so hard? And like, instead of just giving the person the award who deserves it, you know what I mean? So yeah, that was the big thing, that it was like narrative driven, not about basketball. Basketball Reference doesn't have feelings. It doesn't have narrative. It doesn't even have to be Basketball Reference, but like a similar type of numbers. But then that's, I guarantee you, if that were ever to be a thing, people would be nonstop complaining about it. And people, there would be all these theories about how it's rigged and who has control over it, you know, and all those. It would be a wild mess. But
yeah,
I wish things were simpler, and that's just what we could look at.
I would be down if it was weighted and this was like half of the weight.
Oh, yeah. It could be a factor in it.
Because we went into it and the media is terrible.
Yeah. They're better than any other pool of people.
Yes. If you had to take 100 random people, the media pool is probably better.
Better than even players, even coaches, I'd say.
Yes, because they're way less on the personal relationships, you'd think.
Yeah.
But there is just some things where you're just like, don't love that, you know?
Groupthink and narrative and all that stuff is just thing that I would like to get rid of. Obviously, you can't really do that with people and opinions.
Yeah,
but
it's just tough. So you're right. I don't love like this. I don't want this to be the only thing that decides. I would not like that at all.
Yeah, but I feel bringing this up as maybe this could decide all NBA. You know, so it takes it out of the voters' hands of like deciding who. But then, but again, the same complaints would happen of people like saying, I guarantee, like people who think the NBA as a whole is rigged, like that is an actual like population of people that exists pretty widespread in the nation of America, which is just wild to me. But like the people would think that this thing spitting out numbers for sure. So many people who would automatically think it's wrong and messed up and corrupt, you know. So it wouldn't be something that people would get behind as a...
No, I think that like if you were to take a third of everything, all-star everything, you make a third of it be a robot system,
mm-hmm.
and then the other two-thirds are split into thirds the way they are now for the all-star, but then the other two you would have a media and then like a coach's GM or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or fans.
But can't be players, not fans. Fans should not be picking for all NBA. I do not believe.
Oh, no, for all NBA. Yeah, I thought you were saying all-star.
No.
Sorry.
No, I'm saying for all-stars, it's the exact system it is now, except you just jam what is now 100% into 66%, and then this becomes a third of it. And then for all NBA, this can be like half, and then the other half is like GMs and coaches or GMs and owners or someone that like...
And media. Right, you're including media.
With media, yes. Yeah. Like, it would be wedged in some weird magic way. The system now is better than what the worst would be, but it's far from the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I am butting up against my time that I'm going to need to depart.
Yeah,
so
it's a good place to wrap up.
I
think we just end it here abruptly, honestly, because I think we kind of finished that 65-game rule thing. Like, we both think it should be lower, 60, but we both like that it exists. Yeah, thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. check out all the stuff. Do those things.
Patreon.com/hooptheory. Buy me a coffee. Buy Logan a coffee. He's putting in the work, cutting up these clips, captioning me. Do you ever think, try to do that? Think about it. All of these things, check them out. Also head on over to Hoop Journal, the Hoop Journal. They've got a lot of great stuff. I don't know what all their other weird things are because I didn't look, but check them out and then keep it tuned here to the Hoop Theory podcast feed, as they will be kind of on our podcast as well, as
sometimes
we'd like to have them on.
Yeah.
So yes, very soon, as soon as we can make it work, because it's four people's schedules, not an easy thing to coordinate.
Uh-huh.
With that being said, Logan, is there anything else you'd like to add before we depart?
Thank you for listening. You know, we appreciate it. Stay happy, stay healthy. We'll talk to you guys next episode.
Peace.